Zoning laws. Okay, don't start snoring. Stay with me here a minute. Those two words alone might not sound especially vibrant and interesting, but just watch people pour into city commission and council chambers when there's some proposed change to the zoning laws in their neighborhood, and you know things can get lively. Maybe it's deciding whether to allow Bigfoot houses and extra large garages. Maybe it's deciding whether to permit residential and commercial buildings to coexist in the same area, or how many stories a building might be. What one person thinks is a great, awesome idea, such as allowing more shops and restaurants into an area, might be a horrible idea to a homeowner who wants to come home to a peaceful street. Grand Rapids recently implemented a new zoning policy that allows for more mixed uses. Joining us is the director of the Grand Rapids Planning Department, Suzanne Schultz. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And here with us in the studio is Dr. Jonathan Levine, who's an urban planning professor for the University of Michigan. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
I've seen it in my own city, in my own neighborhood, and with my friends. People might not think zoning laws are an interesting topic, but boy, it's a hot-button issue, and I'm sure you've seen that in your careers. Jonathan, get us on the same page. Traditional zoning laws provide separate districts for different types of uses. What was that designed to accomplish?
Well, zoning got going in the United States in the early part of the 20th century when the evils that were to be combated were the evils of overcrowding, the evils of housing next to polluting factories. So we developed tools to lower densities and we developed tools to separate land uses. Okay. We need to think about whether or not the tools developed in one era are serving us well for the problems of another era.
Here we are, a century later. That's okay. So, Suzanne, the zoning policy in Grand Rapids changed over the past few years. Tell us what happened.
Well, we had a 1969 zoning ordinance that had been amended over 300 times, and it was based on that model of having separate uses, that everything, you know, had its place, and it was definitely low density in its design. What we learned during our master plan process, which happened between 2000 to 2002, is that the community had a very different vision than what they had in the 60s about having a mixed-use environment, a walkable city, a healthy city. It's interesting that the mention of the early 20th century, it was related around public health. And now really you're seeing everything turn back into a public health dialogue about how do you get people to move and how do you build transit systems and social equity and access to shops and you know, different forms of transportation. And so that vision did not jibe with our current zoning rules. And so we really had to go back to the drawing board and throw out the old code and start brand new.
And was that a hard sell to the community?
No, I think the community really realized it was broken. It was not developing the results they wanted. And when they saw new projects going in, they felt that, you know, it wasn't complementing the existing character of the neighborhoods, that the form of the development wasn't what they wanted. And then if they were going to achieve the goals of better mass transit and having a vibrant retail district or strong neighborhoods, they really needed to rethink all of those old rules.
So what do you have today? How have things changed? Take us to, say, 10 years ago before these changes and you threw things out and have reworked it. So what are the differences in Grand Rapids?
Well, there's some substantial differences. One is that we have a new form-based code. Form-based means is that you're taking the context of the neighborhood into account when you're creating your regulations. So, for example, if you're in a neighborhood that has all front porches, allowing a house that has the garage on the front to be built right next to those homes doesn't really create a fit in the neighborhood. Or if you're in a retail district, having the building placed at the back of the lot and the parking lot in the front, when you have storefronts that line the sidewalk, doesn't work. And what we had in the old code was the same zone, commercial zone district in the Cherry neighborhood or East Hills neighborhood, which is a very traditional neighborhood context. This, it was the same as on 28th Street or 44th Street, which are much more modern and suburban in nature. So it wasn't fitting. And so the new code today respects the character and the development era of those neighborhoods and seeks to really reinforce them. So we require buildings to be put at the sidewalk now, and recess entries and windows on the stores. And even with homes, if you're in a neighborhood, the garage has to be put behind the house if that's the character of the neighborhood, versus in the more modern neighborhoods, you can put the garage there. I mean, that's a typical character of that neighborhood. But we really looked at the context, and the zoning really followed, and the community was heavily engaged in the writing of the zoning ordinance, which is a little bit unique.
And this is something that is this kind of a forward-thinking trend, Jonathan?
Absolutely, and we view Grand Rapids as somewhat of a model in the state. What they've done is they've made the good legal. In so many cases, when we look at neighborhoods that we love, neighborhoods that we can walk in, neighborhoods that are sociable, neighborhoods from which we can walk to shops and restaurants, and we ask, what would it take to create or maintain those neighborhoods today? And the answer under traditional zoning codes is, it's illegal. We've made the stuff that so many people love and the market loves, because neighborhoods like this command a price premium, we've made it illegal with our modern zoning codes. And so what Grand Rapids has done is implemented some important reforms that make the good legal.
Jonathan, when you talk about having neighborhoods where you can walk to shops and walk to restaurants, how do you get that, but you also want to preserve the sense of neighborhood for the homeowner who wants to not have that around or not have worries about too much commercial traffic? Or how do you balance the two?
The key is having a range of choices. We often talk about the American dream as if it's one thing, as if all of us want the same thing. Usually, it means a big house on a large lot from which we need to drive everywhere. We assert that that's the American dream. There are really many American dreams, and changing our zoning policy is really about allowing those many different American dreams to flourish.
And the payoff, what kind of payoff have you seen economically in Grand Rapids, Suzanne?
Well, in those areas where we focused heavily on placemaking, which is really what those zoning codes are capable of doing, we have seen lots of new development projects happening, lots of new investment, places where you can't even get a place to rent to live, you know, and it could be you're just off the street from where the new bike lane was installed, or you're just, you know, where that brand new business or the new building is going in, and they already are filled before, you know, they've started building the second level on that mixed use building. So we're seeing huge energy going into these neighborhoods and the downtown that we hadn't seen in decades. And we're seeing new types of development forms being created that we haven't seen for 100 years.
What can be done for the suburban cities? Let's say in the Southeast Michigan area, when I think of the newer ones that don't have the traditional downtown, traditional Main Street, Troy, Novi, can things be done to kind of inject this life into those kind of sprawling suburban newer cities?
So first of all, there have been efforts at developing downtowns and developing main streets in municipalities that don't have them. You know, cities really are in constant flux. When we think of cities throughout history, Paris wasn't Paris. Paris was a small village. We make a mistake in the United States when we think that our cities and our municipalities have a certain form and that's going to be the form forever. I have a colleague who likes counting and measuring walkable urban places. And in Southeast Michigan, he counts three significant walkable urban places. In Washington, D.C., he counts 20 to 40, depending on how you count. But here's the interesting thing. Only three of them existed 20 years ago. So things change. And we have to acknowledge and embrace the idea that change can bring positive impacts to our municipalities.
So the villagers with the pitchforks, when they hear the terms mixed use, that's that, you know, try to be open to change and realize what it can bring.
And there's a lot of potential benefits to the homeowners themselves. First of all, there's benefits to increase their accessibility, their ability to get around and to get places. But there's also property value benefits because the market has shown that it really likes this alternative. Commands a price premium even as it uses less land.
You know, a century ago, Michigan, when these traditional zoning rules came to be, we had the big cities, we had the smaller towns, and we had rural. No one knew what the word suburb meant or what a suburb was. To each of you, if you could look ahead, what do you think the residential and commercial spaces in Michigan a century from now might look like? I'll toss that out to you first, Suzanne.
I think the challenge in Michigan is that we need a major paradigm shift. And the more successful that paradigm shift is, the more successful we'll see Michigan be. And it's really centered around tolerance for parking and your idea of what automobile ownership is supposed to be, which is related to that American dream that was mentioned earlier. What the demographics are going to happen, you know, how they're going to change in the next decade. When you have 10,000 baby boomers a day retiring, and three-quarters of the population's not going to be in the mom and dad and two-kid households anymore. Understanding those shifts, and, you know, you outlive your ability to drive by 7 to 10 years, depending if you're a man or a woman. And understanding design versus density and people being afraid of this, you know, number of units per acre rather than looking at what does the design of the building do for your environment. That transition and understanding those components are really essential for us to be able to move towards a more sustainable future. And by sustainable, I mean the suburban model and this changing environment that we have is not sustainable. We can't pave more roads. We can't pave the roads we have today. We can't continue to build the infrastructure and the types of communities that we have in the past without rethinking what all of our communities look like and how we invest and make those places where you can live your entire lifetime in one place rather than having to go to a retirement community. Or, you know, if you're a young single parent, how you're going to get around to your job or education. And so I think that's the real challenge for us in moving forward is, you know, understanding these and getting the Michigan public to understand that it's about design. It's about not worrying so much about your car as an entitlement, but that we really need to think about how we get around for everyone, and, you know, especially with the changing demographics.
Jonathan?
Well, you asked about 100 years from now, and unfortunately, I don't have any tools to predict 100 years from now, and I would be hard-pressed to predict 10 years from now.
Ah.
But there's a few things that I can identify. First are the demographic trends that Suzanne mentioned. Very, very important changes in demographics, important changes in preferences. So what we see, first of all, with the retiring baby boom generation, secondly, with the kids of the baby boom generation, both of them seem to have preferences for more walkable urban places, less reliance on the automobile. In fact, we're even seeing the young people get licensed at a later and later age.
Very much so.
Nowadays. So the demographic trends will create the demand for the kind of places that Suzanne and I are talking about. The question really is, do our policies allow that demand to be realized? And that's the big unknown. Currently, we have a lot of obstacles to the kind of policy reform that Suzanne was talking about. We have a lot of cities that haven't adopted the forward-thinking approach of Grand Rapids and are stuck in an earlier way of thinking about zoning. Reforming the policies from a standpoint of the law is very easy. It just takes a vote of council. Reforming the policies from a standpoint of politics is very hard.
Yes.
So one of the things that needs to happen is that municipalities need to learn one from another. So when Ann Arborites travel to Grand Rapids and they say, oh, you know what? This kind of zoning produces some pretty nice results. It doesn't produce the hell that
yes.
some people might imagine.
Yes.
That's a process of learning. Other policy reforms could go farther. For example, when the states understand that they have some leverage as well. After all, the states support a whole lot of infrastructure right. in our municipalities, whether it's roads or schools. The state can link their policies to municipal policies if the state understands that this is a public policy priority. So the state can actually change the incentive system. And the third and most far-reaching approach to policy reform would be the regionalist policy reform, where local power is shared with regional power in determining our land use policies and our fiscal climate for our municipalities.
interesting conversation. Really enjoyed having you with us. Dr. Jonathan Levine, Urban Planning Professor for the University of Michigan, joining us in the studio. And from Grand Rapids, the Director of the Grand Rapids Planning Department, Suzanne Schultz. Thanks to both of you for being on the program.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.